Mark Field here on Harrogate Hospital Radio. Now, a few weeks ago, I was very fortunate to be invited to the TP on the Stray at the Cedar Court Hotel, where HHCC launched their brand new book, Focus on the Good, which focuses on the pandemic from the beginning of 2020. And Leah Knight, who is the author, translated all these stories into poems. And I was very fortunate on the evening to meet a very nice young gentleman called Alan Barker, who was also is also featured in the book. And his poem is called The Strive to Survive. And Alan actually joins me in the studios today. Hello, Alan.
Hello there, Mark.
Thank you for joining us. It was an absolute joy to meet you on that night as well. And we'll talk about the book a little bit later on, but you've also written a book of poems called Reasons for Rhyme in aid of the nurses at the Sir Robert Ogden Macmillan Centre here at Harrogate District Hospital. First of all, how did it feel to find out that you'd actually been chosen to feature in the book, Focus on the Good, your piece, Strive to Survive?
I was delighted. Having lost my son-in-law with cancer and my wife,
yep,
within 7 weeks of each other, I decided that if I could raise any money for the Macmillan nurses, mm-hmm, I would do it. And
absolutely,
this was the start.
Absolutely. And there are some really, really fantastic poems in there as well. The Strive to Survive is one of the first poems in the book that you've actually written as well. You're from Hartlepool originally, so...
No, from Darlington. Mother comes from Hartlepool.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Dad, yeah, from Darlington.
Right. How long have you been in Harrogate then, Alan?
I came to Harrogate in 1947 as an apprentice chef at the Queen Hotel, which is now the Cedar Court.
Okay, yeah.
So it was like a remembrance thing, meeting you in the teepee.
Absolutely.
Going back all
memories.
Them years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've lived a really colourful life as well. So let's move on while we talk about that. What inspired you to write your autobiography in I Am So Proud to Be English?
Well, if you look at the poems, the first poem is The Strive to Survive.
Yeah.
Which is from my childhood, through my young life, mm-hmm, until I got married. And I thought, my children, my grandchildren, mm-hmm, and my great-grandchildren,
yeah,
should know what sort of life we lived in the,
sure,
1920s and 30s.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And so I put pen to
paper. Pen to paper.
And then I introduced humour into some of the... tales. One or two are from like a cousin, and they are important in telling the family story.
Mm.
Yeah.
In the foreword, it says, a recollection of 7 decades of nostalgia, laughter, tears, and much happiness. Wonderful Victorian parents with teachings of discipline and honesty.
Yes.
Were your parents that strict?
Seeing my father was with the Durham Light Infantry,
yeah,
a sergeant, you would expect him to be strict.
Quite strict, yeah.
He was, but his mannerism was so gentle,
okay,
it was unbelievable. I was the fifth child, so by the time I was growing up...
How many siblings did you have?
4 more siblings. My sister was the eldest,
yeah,
and then there was four brothers.
Now, your mum was one of 12.
Mum was one of 12.
So it is a long line of...
Oh, when we went to Hartlepool, sometimes you didn't know who was who. It was like a circus. Anyway... I thought seriously about how are these children going to respect where they come from,
mm,
their heritage.
Mm.
And that the Strive to Survive started it. And then as you go through, there are stories, simple stories,
mm-hmm,
some very comical. I mean, I joined 2 writing clubs,
mm-hmm,
and that set me going.
Yeah.
Recalling things in there which I'd forgotten. Mm-hmm. You do tend to forget until you start going through the years.
Yep.
And that there's still the book. There's a lot more I could have written now when I look back.
You thought about things afterwards.
You do. That's what you tend to do. You suddenly realise you can't remember everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Since then, of course, I've written another book. And I had the script written until 2003.
Right.
I thought I would write about the future, and I called the book Time is Running Out.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, a friend called Paul Smith has now edited that book and finished it off for me.
Very good.
Because I got in, you know, ghost in other things.
So have you had that published now then?
That's just published.
Brilliant.
And can be got from the Wise Old Owl publishers or Amazon.
What is the book called again?
Time is Running Out. It's about young people who are not happy to have families,
sure,
because of the future.
Mm-hmm.
This is 1920, 30 odd. Now he's had to move it because I finished it in 2003.
Yeah.
But he's just done it now. In the last 2 years, he's had to shift it to 1950.
I understand.
2050. So,
right.
Yeah. The one thing that I did write was that there was a pandemic coming out of China.
Wow.
And that's written on the book.
This is way
from
before
2003.
This is way before it happened.
This is way long before.
Wow,
yeah.
Jeepers.
Yeah. This is 18 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how real that's turned out to be.
Yeah.
Taking a step back, in part of your book, which I haven't had a chance to read at all, I've only started reading it today, you've been lucky enough to go to the Olympics twice. Tell us about that.
Lucky, that goes back to Eileen and my brother.
Eileen's your wife.
And my brother's wife, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, they both passed away just of late. As I say, we're brought up in sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. You name it, we did it. Except probably badminton and squash weren't the things then. With football, cricket, judo, boxing, gymnastics, cycling. Yeah, we really engaged ourselves.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So how did you get to the Olympics? I mean, you know, back in the day, I mean, that must
well,
have been...
Well, the idea came in 1964 when the Tokyo Games were on.
Yeah.
And we talked about it and said, oh, love to go. Love to go to the Olympics.
Mm.
So the next one's Mexico. We started talking about it. And then we got a bit serious. We started writing to the Olympic Committee, and then Seth was on Newcastle Radio and talked to the lad there about the Olympics. He said, well, how are you going to get there? I said, well, we're on about working our passage and going this way and that way. There's letters gone out all over the place.
Mm. So like now, today, for instance, you can actually fly direct to the venues.
Well, we inquired about that at the time.
So
you could pay and everything was organised.
Yep.
But we wanted to do something different.
Right.
So anyway, we talked to the girls about it and Eileen says, how long are you be away? I said, well, we've got now to the idea of hitchhiking. We've found out that Icelandic Airlines, Loughlíðar, have a plane going from Glasgow via Reykjavik to New York for £127 return with the return open. We thought that would be ideal. So while our assessors at Newcastle being interviewed, he mentioned this, the lad who was in him said, oh, my sister lives in Long Island, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband works at the airport, Kennedy Airport. So that was jotted down. By then, I'd stopped chefing and I was working at Dunlop Factory here in Harrogate.
Yep.
And people were getting to know about it and said, well, you won't get time off. And I did go and see one of the bosses. I just give me notice in. I said, because this factory, there's always jobs going.
Yeah.
I said, I've walked into it. And since then, my son walked into it. Eileen walked into a job. My daughter walked into a job. My daughter-in-law, all five of us worked there in different places.
Wow.
Anyway, it snowballed. So I started going to night school for Spanish when I had time because I also had a window cleaning around besides doing shift work and saving every penny. Because Eileen had said, if you can put 6 weeks' housekeeping money there for me and the bairns, okay, that's what you want to do, do I know it? Well, we'd go in the club and having a drink. One woman, huh? You're letting him go for 6 weeks. I wouldn't let him go, pointing to her husband, you know.
Yeah.
Some were with us, some weren't. You'll never do it.
It must have been such a massive adventure back in 1964 then.
1968. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
It was because Butlins was the place in them days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We set off from Downton. Joan drove us down to Scotch Corner. And we were dressed in suits. We had umbrellas and bowler hats to look like English gentlemen.
I've seen the picture.
With Union Jacks on our pockets,
yep.
Union Jacks on our backpack. I said, now, kid, my backpack's getting heavy, you know, because I took 4 cans of Newcastle Brown Ale. I said, when we get there, we'll open that. Joan dropped us off at the Scotch Corner, and we stood there quite a bit. I said, oh, kid, we won't get to Glasgow for the plane. We're going on. We got picked up and dropped off. Anyway, by the time we got to the airport, our kid had lost his gamp.
Mm.
Yeah.
Lost his gamp?
His gamp. It's umbrella.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
We got reminded later on about it. Anyway, we got the plane and we went to Iceland. We stayed overnight. Then we flew from there to Kennedy Airport. got to Kennedy Airport. So I said, we'll inquire about a lad that we were going to stay with. Got to this counter, like, and I said, you're asking about one of the employees here. I said, well, yeah, just... He said, there are 2,500 people work on this aerodrome. He said, I haven't got a clue.
Oh, dear.
I said, well, I've got the address. So we hired one of these, the taxis there, they call it, like a limousine, yeah? Mm-hmm. And when they get enough bookings, they decide the route they're taking.
Sure.
Yeah. So we said, oh, yeah, well, we money, how much is it going to cost? Oh, from here to Long Island, $8.
Which is a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, yeah. We were only allowed to carry so much money, you know.
Yeah.
It was limited. Mm-hmm. So we got to Long Island. The driver come out, he says, that's $12. I said, it's $8. And he moaned and groaned and took the $8 and jumped in. And so we said, well, where are we? We walked nearly 2 miles before we got to this house.
Jeepers. How long did it actually take you from leaving Glasgow to get to the Olympic Games?
We got there in 10, 11 days. Because then I'd started work at Dunlop, finished the chefing, of course, I mentioned Dunlop.
Yep.
So I said, they've got a place in Buffalo, and I've been writing to them and been invited to stay there to go and look around the factory. On the way up, we got different lifts. We got to where Mike Tyson was born, up in New York State.
So once you got to the Olympics, how long did you stay at the Olympics for?
From the opening ceremony to the closing ceremony.
Did you really?
We sat for hours. I've still got all the paperwork.
Wow.
In fact, I was sorting it out the other day. I've got tickets from Munich and Mexico, which are selling on Amazon at £20 a time.
Wow, very good.
And then I picked up this badge. I found it on a bus as we were going down to the Olympic Village.
Mm-hmm.
I said to our kid, oh, it's a press badge. We walked into the Olympic Village.
No.
They just started to bow down and walked
no.
in.
Somebody
got in there.
Somebody dropped it and you picked it up and they thought you were press.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we had our cameras.
So we
had a Bell and Howell movie and that. And we looked so official. Walked in, no problem. Go in the back of the restaurant and said, A Volvo Dado Frutas. I've forgotten my fruit. Si, senor, I need to walk in, get a few bananas and whatnot, and then go and settle down, playing football with all the well-known people, kicking a ball about and that.
Let's talk about the trip to the second Olympics, but just let's have a piece of music first before we move on to that, Alan. So your first piece of music that you've chosen is dedicated to your late wife, Eileen. Tell us the track and why you've chosen it.
It was Eileen's favourite.
Okay.
And... I used to sing when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a choir. I used to do Christmas concerts.
Okay.
And since I lost Eileen, I've joined Harrogate Harmony Singers.
Right.
But I had a problem with me larynx.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 6 months treatment at the hospital here to get the vocal cords corrected, which they've finally done. I just feel I can't be learning new songs now at 90-odd. But Eileen would... She just loved that, and we'd sing that together.
And what's the song?
True Love.
Suntan, wind blown, honeymooners at last alone, feeling far above par. Oh, how lucky we are. While I give to you and you give to me, a guardian angel on high. with nothing to do but to give to you and to give to me love forever true for you. To give to you and to give to me love forever true. Love forever
true love. Bing Crosby and Grace Kelly, a very dear favourite of Alan and his late wife Eileen's. Lovely piece of music. You were singing away to that in the studio there, Alan. Brings back nice memories.
Wonderful.
Good. The second Olympic Games you went to. Well, what year was that?
That was 1972.
Okay.
Must mention the reason for this, Mark. What happened was, in this long travel, we get down through up to Canada to see friends, back down through America. Mm-hmm. Right, and we get into Mexico City by train because we were advised not to do any more hitchhiking because it was two Americans found.
Oh dear.
They were stripped of everything.
Yeah, it was later than obviously the 60s where things were getting a little bit more.
That's right.
Yeah, so you had to be more careful.
Yeah, okay. And student riots were on.
Ah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So we got into the hotel, got into the room. I said, okay, come on, we'll go down and the bar and have a drink. And there was three blokes sat at a table. And as we walked past, I said, okay, speak in English then. I said, come on, let's go back and have a natter with them, see where they're from. And went back, and it was Martin Bell.
The politician, as it were.
Yeah, he was the BBC News
man
then,
yeah,
them
yep.
days.
Yep, yep.
And he's soundsman and he's cameraman.
Yep.
And we sat down there and we were having a good natter. And we're telling stories of what's happened. Different people, there's that many that took us in. And yeah. So I said, anyway, we've got to go down to the bull ring with these certificates and they'll give us all our tickets. So well organised it was. We came back from the bull ring on the Friday and there was a note. Alan says, don't worry about getting to the opening ceremony tomorrow. I will be interviewing you outside the stadium.
So Martin Bell actually interviewed you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Before he interviewed, he said, I'll have a little run through and we'll talk.
Yeah.
And then we'll go through it so there's no problems.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, there is a problem. I said, because I've carried these cans of beer.
Yeah.
He said, well, when I come to it, we'll open it and have a drink, the four of us. Because he didn't drink, so it was the cameraman, the soundsman.
So you opened the cans of Newcastle Brown.
And it's there in the book.
Wow.
After the interview, I said, okay, no, I'll take these films. I'll just shove them in the camera shop, collect them when I come out. And come out, addressed it straight to Airmail, Newcastle Brewery.
Yeah.
Right?
Pictures of them? Good publicity.
Tuesday morning, we laid in bed and the phone rings. And our kid picks it up, and because he couldn't speak any Spanish anyway, he said, yeah, yeah. Just a minute, he said. He said, it's Newcastle Brewery. He says, we've been on BBC News, something Newcastle Brewery, twice.
Very good.
Right? He said, they want to know if we'll accept 6 dozen cans. Have a VIP day.
Of course you will.
And £100 each.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, we'll accept that. Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant publicity. There. Back in 1972, that would have been a lot of money as well. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So two.
So that's what created the Munich thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So two visits to the Olympic Games. Alan, do you mind me asking how old you are?
91.
Wow, you look so good for 91. So let's move on, because obviously there is an awful lot we can talk about. your book, I'm So Proud to Be English, is like you said, it's about your life story, the humour in there as well, but the poems that you've actually written as well, which moves on to the nurses at the Sir Robert Ogden Macmillan Centre, Reason for Rhyme. How did that come about?
The Strive to Survive,
yes,
was the initial thing.
Yep.
I'd written that and I thought, well, there's so much happened since.
Yep.
And I'd been writing a bit of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I would write verse about anything. I was at a writing circle meeting. I used to get the daily paper and we sat down and we used to have a little general talk before we decided what homework we'd done on talking about the run of things.
Mm.
And I said, I've read the paper this morning and do you know what I've read? He said, what? They're talking about bridge in the Olympic Games. I said, that's ridiculous.
That's hardly a sport.
The chairman and a woman sat up, what are you talking about? They were fanatic bridge players,
really?
I didn't realise.
Well, it's not a sport though, is it?
It's not, that's what I was saying. I said, it's just a game of cards.
Very
and they
good.
Were going, just a game of cards?
Yeah.
It's in there.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'll have to have a look at that one.
Yes.
Moving on, you are selling your book at the HHCC Pop-Up Christmas Market. Which is going to be in November as well. Tell us about the book and how people can get hold of it, Alan.
I am prepared to deliver anywhere in Harrogate for £5. Yeah, and every penny will go to the nurses.
Absolutely, absolutely brilliant. So the reaction that you've had from the folks on the Good Book, I mean, it was an absolute pleasure to meet you there and talk about the books that you've read, and you just enthralled me when I was talking to you, which is why I invited you to the studio to help publicise the books that you've written as well. So at the Pop-Up Christmas Market, can people still buy I'm So Proud to Be English?
That is the idea.
Okay, and the leaflet one?
The reason to rhyme, and yeah, I'm So Proud to Be English, will be there available for £5.
Yep.
And I've just had a rummage round.
Mm-hmm.
Eileen was a jigsaw fanatic.
Yep.
And I have sold one or two. I have got unopened, beautiful jigsaws up to 5,000 pieces,
mm-hmm.
which sell on Amazon for around about £10 plus packaging mm-hmm. postage. I'm going to put them also for £5, which will go towards the same cause.
Very good. It's an absolute pleasure as well to have you here in the studio to talk about the two books. I mean, I could talk forever to you because you fascinate me with your stories. So we're going to finish with a piece of music that you've chosen as well. Tell us why you've chosen this piece. It's quite poignant.
My dad wasn't a strict man, as I've said, in the respect that he could say something quiet. He wasn't a sergeant who shouted. He just spoke to you and gently persuaded you. There's your socks, son.
Mm.
There's a mushroom and some wool and a needle. You made the hole, just mend it.
Oh,
yes. And you did.
And you had to do
it. Yeah. I mean, by
so,
then...
So it was very matter-of-fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
Or strict.
Yeah. Quietly strict.
Mm.
And never talk about what he'd done. And the moment we are in touch now with certain army people,
mm-hmm.
Dad won Bisley in 1937.
Yeah.
And we think he was one of Churchill's sharpshooters because he once went back off leave and my eldest brother was also on leave from the Navy and they travelled down from Dalton to King's Cross. My dad said, oh, I've got to go to the army headquarters anyway to meet somebody. And we thought, he's doing something special, my dad. He'd left the Dunland Light Infantry and he joined the Royal Engineers.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he won Bisley, that just before the war. And he would sometimes appear outside our house in Dalton on a motorbike on his way up to Glasgow.
Yeah.
And he'd take charge of American and Canadian troop trains because he knew anything about railways. And he was in charge of that train because he was stationed at Matlock, just outside Derby, in the early part of the war, and my mum and me went to see him. He took us to have a look at where he was training people about railways. And we got to this field, and it just looked like a big hump. Anyway, we walked in, went down these steps, opened it up. There was every type of signal and train on this massive thing. His desk was there, and he was teaching people on signals and everything. All the movement of train. So he really was a special man.
So the reason for choosing Abide With Me?
In the Dunland Light Infantry, that was their hymn.
There's the connection.
There was the connection.
Okay.
And they asked me to sing it a cappella in a graveyard, is very difficult.
Well, this version, Alan, is by Catherine Jenkins. It's called Abide With Me. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today about your book. Reasons for Rhyme, as I said, is in aid of the nurses at the Sir Robert Ogden Midland Centre here in Harrogate. And the book, I'm So Proud To Be English, both are going to be on sale at the HHCC pop-up Christmas market in November. Here's Robin to tell us about the book, which the poem Strive With Me is featured in as well. Then we'll have the piece of music from Catherine Jenkins.
Harrogate Hospital and Community Charity Events Guide.
HHCC are inviting you to join us in focusing on the good. In collaboration with our author, Leah Knight, we have brought together your stories, anecdotes, photos and memories to create our specially commissioned Focus on the Good book. This new addition to your bookshelf reflects how COVID-19 affected us all. Communities, colleagues, volunteers and families came together to support each other during a time of need. Head over to the HHCC website and get yours now for a donation of $12.99, with all proceeds going directly towards HFD patients, service users and staff.
To find out more about any of their events or how you can support them, go to their website, hhcc.co.uk.